My name is Jennifer Perry. I'm Managing Director for JPMorgan Chase, and I lead our Northeast Technology and Disruptive Commerce team here in Boston. I'm thrilled to be here on behalf of JPMorgan. Several years ago, we developed the program called Women on the Move that was internally based to start and is now expanded externally to multiple communities and constituents across the globe. The goal of Women on the Move is to expand women-run businesses, improve women's financial health, and advance women's career growth. In preparing for this quick speech here, or quick introduction of Mary, I thought of an anecdote of something that impacted me in my career. And generally, I've had lots of different kinds of bosses. Mary spoke about this morning. The unicorn boss, the toxic boss, and I even see some old coworkers in here, so you may have commonality there, and everything in between. But at one meeting I was at, it was a more senior woman who was at the team in HR. We were around a table of all senior leaders, and they were all men. And I had an idea, and I tried to share it. It didn't go very far, but a few minutes later, a senior man shared it, and it went very far. So after that meeting, she took me aside. It was about 30 seconds and said, "I'm not sure if it's your tone of voice, your confidence, or generally your projection, but you earned a seat at that table. So if you earned a seat at that table, let's make sure to get your voice heard and figure it out." She didn't tell me how to do that, but that was a point that still sticks with me today. But you guys didn't come here to hear me speak. So I'm pleased to introduce Mary Abajay with leadership training company CareerStone Group. Mary's also the author of Managing Up, How to Move Up, Win at Work, and Succeed with Any Type of Boss. And I'm pleased to announce Mary and kick off our session today on influence and how to change minds and win at work. Mary?
Thank you. Thank you, John Perry. Oh, and by the way, for you. Hey, everybody, how's it going? I am so excited to be here. All right, so we are going to have an amazing conversation today. I have three amazing panelists, Lee, Roxanne, and Shannon, that you're going to hear from in a minute, and they are going to share with us and you their expertise and their wisdom about influencing so that you can win at work, you can win at home, and you can make your dreams come true. But you're going to have to listen to me for a few minutes. So I'm going to, if you would allow me, I'm going to set the stage a little bit for our conversation about influence. So when we're thinking about influence, we have to realize it is a critical skill in our work lives and in our personal lives, right? It's a critical skill because, unfortunately, we can't control other people, can we? Mm-mm. All we can do is influence other people. All we can do is control ourselves. We get to choose our words, our actions, our deeds, our thoughts, the way we behave with others. And so if we want to influence others, if we want to win their hearts and minds, we have to start with our own hearts and minds. We have to start with who we are. Because who we are, our person, our persona, how we are in the world is one of your greatest influence tools you will ever have. And it's the only influence tool that you take everywhere you go, regardless of the system. And when I call this your personal power to influence, it's about having positive personal impact on people. It's about when you engage with people that they feel good about the engagement. They feel good about you. And most importantly, they feel good about themselves. How many of you have had people in your life that you interact with, and after that interaction, you feel kind of crappy about them? You feel crappy about the interaction. And you feel crappy about yourself, right? You're never going to influence people if they make them feel crappy. Every interaction you have with somebody is an opportunity to do one of three things. It's an opportunity to either build relationship, it's an opportunity to maintain the relationship, or it's an opportunity to diminish the relationship. When you want to influence people, you've got to at least maintain, if not build. Every interaction you have with everybody is an opportunity to do one of three things. You can either raise somebody's status, you can maintain somebody's status, or you can lower somebody's status. And make no mistake about it, people have a need for status. And by status, I don't mean to feel better than anybody else, but people have a neuropsychological need to feel valued and valuable in relation to other people. So when you are trying to influence other people, I'm bringing this close to home, the people close to you, people you work with, we want to make sure that we are interacting with them in a way that they feel valued. We want to make sure we're interacting in a way that we are using positive personal impact. And there are four keys to doing this. Number one, it takes self-awareness, right? It takes self-awareness. We know that emotional intelligence is all about self-awareness. Do we know what drives us? Do we know our emotions? Do we know what our priorities are? Do we understand that about ourselves? But self-awareness, just like, for example, I know I'm impatient. I am really impatient. And by the way, I also know that I talk really fast, and I know that about me. But do I take that a step further, and do I become aware of my impact on other people? My impact, how am I being impatient impacts other people? How am I speaking too fast impacts other people? If you think that you have high self-awareness, please stand up. If you think you have high self-awareness, please stand up. Good for you, because you need to. All right, now let me ask you this question. Did I say sit down? I said stand up. I don't want to say down. All right, if you think that you have also have high self-awareness about your impact on other people, remain standing. All right? If you think that if I went and asked the people that were closest to you, if your assessment of your impact was the same as theirs, remain standing. Otherwise, sit down if you're not sure. All right. Now, for those of you who are still standing, would you bet your life savings on that? Because here's the thing. There is a study done by a woman named Dr. Tasha Urich, who has a great book called Insight, and she did just that. She went and surveyed hundreds of leaders, and she found that 90 to 95% of them said, I am highly self-aware. And she said, oh, that's very interesting. Let me go check that out. She then went and she surveyed the people that they lead and to see how many of their assessments were aligned with the leader's assessment. Guess how many people were actually self-aware? 10 to 15%, right? So you've got to be already influenced. You've got to really be aware of your impact on other people. Seek it out. Get some feedback. Number two, you have to have empathy. You have to have empathy. Empathy is key, because the more we can understand what's going on for other people, the more we can figure out how to interact with them. And empathy is both an emotion, but it's also a cognition. And here's what I mean. One of the ways you can trick your heart into being empathetic is to use your mind to trick your heart. And it looks like this. Something simple. Two words. Three words. Assume positive intent. Right? Because what happens when we assume negative intent? Yeah, we get angry, we approach that person different. It can be as simple as just saying, you know what, you're not a horrible person, maybe you're just in a hurry. How many of you drove a car recently? How many of you got cut off by another driver? What did you say about that other driver? Maybe you had some hand gestures to go along with it. But what if instead of calling that driver a jerk or worse, what if you said, you know what, maybe that person is just in a hurry. Maybe that person is going to the hospital. Maybe that person's child just got kicked out of school or something. You know, if we could assume positive intent, think about how much more kind of choices and behaviors you could have to influence people. Okay. Number three, start to use the platinum rule. Right? What's the golden rule, people? Treat others as you would want to be treated. And when does that work? When people are just like you, right? So in order to use the platinum rule, figure out how people like to interact. How many of you are introverts in this room? Yeah. Okay, in real life, I'm an introvert, right? So in real life, I'm going to be walking through my world like this. I'm not going to say hello. I'm not going to talk to anybody. If I see you on the street, I'm crossing over, so I don't have to say hello, right? And so who's an introvert? So if I walk by you and don't say hello, you're probably giddy up. You're like, that's awesome, right? Who's an extrovert? If I walk by you and not just say hello, you're going to say, what a bitch, right? You're not going to like it, right? So if I know that you want to engage, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to adjust my behavior just a little bit to engage with you, because that's going to bring you closer to me. That's going to ensure positive personal impact. And if I know you don't need a lot of that, I'm not going to plop in your office and be like, girl, you would not believe what happened, right? Because that's going to posture. So it's about understanding the platinum rule and adjusting your behavior enough so you're bringing people towards you and not away. And the fourth area to really ensure a positive personal impact is authenticity. Be who you are. And yes, I know you're going to say, well, if I'm not authentically friendly, why should I be friendly? Well, here's the thing. Authenticity isn't about being exactly the same person everywhere you go. It's about bringing your values, your sensibility, your spirit, your energy, your personality to it in a good way, right? In a way that's helpful. For example, authentically, I swear like a sailor that wants to be a truck driver. I love salty vocabulary. Ask any of my friends. It's F-bomb this, F-bomb that, right? But does it make me inauthentic if I don't drop an F-bomb today? No. But you still get that could come out any minute, right? It's like that danger thing, right? So authenticity. So, and it just might. I'm going to really try hard. So positive personal impact. If you want to win over hearts and minds of other people, we have to start with our own. We have to start to understand who we are and how we, with the tools at our disposal, and influence other people. All right, you guys ready here for some experts now? All right. So I actually have little cards for them so I could do it right. All right, now, I'm doing this alphabetically by last name. Miss Lee Carter, would you please stand up? Give her a round of applause. I'm gonna give her an introduction. Come on up. All right. Lee Carter is a communications expert and author of Persuasion, Convincing Others When Facts Don't Seem to Matter. You need to come home with me to Washington, D.C., by the way. She is president of Meslansky & Partners, where she oversees communication and language strategy for Fortune 100 and 500 companies, trade associations, and nonprofits. She's a weekly contributor on Fox and MSNBC, where she provides unique insights on U.S. politics. Unlike most commentators, she doesn't rely on traditional polling. Rather, she analyzes voters' emotional responses to help her understand voter engagement and sentiment on a deeper, more visceral level. Her work has won many awards, including the Olga V. Award, the Silver Anvil Award, the Webby Award, and the Web Marketing Association Award. Additionally, Lee serves as a member of the National Head Start Association Advisory Board and is a fellow of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations Young Leadership Forum. And she should be showcasing her book called Persuasion, which she forgot to bring here, but she's going to do a book signing at 12:30. You have to go and buy her book. It's fabulous. All right, Shannon. All right, Shannon Restich, please come up. Restich, I am sorry. Shannon Restich is the head of North America for Rare Diseases and Rare Blood Disorders for Sanofi Genzyme. She is dedicated to inclusion, diversity, and gender parity and has held global leadership positions for the past 5 years with Healthcare Business and Women's Association. Prior to joining Sanofi, Shannon served as a board director, EVP, and chief commercial officer for ActiveCore, a global franchise head of hematology for Shire. I love that word, hematology. Additionally, she spent multiple years in R&D and brand development with Kraft Foods and held marketing leadership roles with TAP Pharmaceuticals. Shannon received her MBA from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University and earned her undergraduate degree from Purdue University in biological engineering. Please welcome Shannon. Last but not least, please welcome to the stage Roxana Sarmiento. Roxanne has a wealth of marketing and brand management experience. Prior to becoming a digital strategist and blogger, she'd worked with Hispanic, Latin American, and general markets for global leaders such as L'Oreal and Colgate-Palmolive. You probably gave the best gifts to your friends. I did. She brought her marketing and sales know-how to her position as COO. A bicultural American with deep Dominican and Colombian roots, Roxana grew up in Santo Domingo in Miami. She now calls Boston her home, where she lives with her husband, their three sons, and a crazy boxer named Lola. Roxana earned her MBA from the Darden Graduate School of Business at the University of Virginia. Welcome, Roxana.
Thank you.
Are you adjusting to the cold here?
No.
I love that honesty. All right, ladies, I'm going to start with a question for all of you. I ended my talk talking about authenticity. Am I wrong? Am I crazy? What do you see the role of authenticity as being part of being a good influencer? We will start here and move down.
Okay. Well, I do agree that authenticity is important for influence. It's actually key because people are afraid to be authentic, usually because they're afraid they might be different than other people. But In order to influence people, you have to bring something to the table. And what makes you different is what gives you a different perspective. It makes you stand out. A lot of times I tell the women in our network that authenticity is their superpower. So yes, I completely agree with you.
Thank you. Ms. Shannon.
Well, I'm so inspired to be a part of this topic. It is my favorite topic, and that is because learning the lesson on how to be authentic and the power of it had a very profound effect on me in life and in my career. And perhaps, like many in this room, starting off my career thinking that I had to look a certain way and act a certain way and be a certain way, and I studied leadership books and those around my organizations and out in the broader world of business of how I should behave and look and act. And I went about seeking to be the smartest person, to be perfect, to always be that voice at the table. And while that helped from a rational and on paper standpoint, it was a very humbling experience several years into my career when I was told, well, you are coming across as smart and you know your work and you work hard. However, people find you aloof. Mm. And that word stung me because my friends and family would never use that word to describe me. And I felt like a failure. And that lesson taught me the value of bringing your real self to work. And it is only when you do value and bring your true self to all that you do, to work and to life, that's when people get to know the real you, and the real you gets to shine. And I am so honored to be a part of this topic because I think so many people can continue to learn that lesson that you are enough, and to bring whoever you are to the table and to everything that you do, because that's what unleashes your greatest power.
Love that. Thank you. And Lee, I know it's one of the chapters in your book, so yeah. Tell us about authenticity from your perspective.
Oh, there it is. Thank you. Yeah, so authenticity
to me. Pause for shameless self-promotion. There we go. That's
right. Here we go. Get it. Chapter 2, authenticity. I think that authenticity, so the book has 9 steps to persuade anyone of anything, and the subtitle is Convincing Others When Facts Don't Seem to Matter. It's relevant right now. I think authenticity is everything. If we're not real, we don't connect. The only way that you're going to persuade, that you're going to engage, that you're going to influence, is if you have a meaningful and true connection with others. Because the whole point of this is trying to change somebody's mind. And the only way you can do that is if you connect. The biggest way to sink persuasion, to sink influence, is if you have a contradiction. So if you're fake, if you're phony, if you're not being true to who you are, there's no way it's going to be real. So I think authenticity is everything. I track voters' reactions to all of the different candidates and all of the different things. I was tracking Hillary Clinton. And one of the things that people kept saying over and over again is she wasn't authentic. And that was really hard. I think probably it was hard for her to hear. And a lot of people would dismiss that and say that's gendered feedback, right? And what I found is there were a couple key moments during the campaign that she just let her hair down a little bit and let you into who she was. And there was one interview that she did, and it was the most powerful interview that I had tested. And somebody said, so how does it feel when you read some of these things about yourself? And she said, you know, it really hurts my feelings. And it was like, ah, yes, you're just like us. And I think so often we try to be perfect, we try to be like you're talking about, and it ends up making you aloof. But also when you're trying to persuade people about your company, about your brand, about your products, you gotta know your weaknesses and lean right into them, because that's where meaningful stuff happens. That's where all change happens. So.
Yeah, I love that, because that's what makes you human. Like, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, which is like the armpit of Ohio next to Cleveland. I guess worse than that. And I used to be embarrassed about it, but then one day I'm like, you know, I'm going to be proud of it. So, because when you are proud of some of your things that are kind of your warts, it's amazing how that attracts people.
Amen.
Yeah. I'm from Ohio, too.
Oh, where are you from in Ohio?
A small town near Dayton.
Oh, we'll talk. Who else is from Ohio originally? Ohio. Buckeyes. There we go. Buckeye love.
Oh. All right. I know Ohio people.
All right. So we started with Roxana first. We're going to start with Shannon with this one. As you reflect about persuasion and influence, what's the power of begin to talk about human emotion. What's the power of appealing to human emotion
yes.
to influence, especially when we're led to believe that we're rational creatures?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, one of my favorite quotes, and I don't know who the original author was because I've been stealing it for years at this point, is that humans are emotional beings that have the ability to rationalize versus being rational beings that have the power to feel emotion. And we all strive, as you were saying, for connection, to feel something. And it is when you're able to connect on that level, you have to have the rational as well. You have to be able to motivate and influence people on a rational level, but adding that layer of the emotional, and that emotional connection is where the true power is. I call it the secret sauce, when you can have the rational and the emotional, because that's where you really unleash the power of the influence.
And how do you do that?
You do that through allowing yourself to be vulnerable. And Brené Brown was here yesterday. She had a profound impact on my life as well, that vulnerability is the greatest strength. You have to open your heart. You have to open yourself and become vulnerable to let that person in, because to have a true connection, you have to be authentic. You have to let some of your scars, some of your emotion, and put it out there, you know, for that other person and for the world to see.
Thank you. Miss Lee, what is the hardest thing? Because you do this for a living, right? You persuade people for a living,
yeah.
Influence people. What's the hardest thing you've ever had to persuade somebody about?
Oh, man. So my company, we get hired to persuade people of different things, whether that company is a good company, whether it's really challenging situations, right? And I've had personally very challenging times where I had to, you know, I had a 360 that was really challenging and I had to turn that around. I can talk to you about that. But there's two initiatives that we worked on in the last year that I think were probably the hardest. And one is we were hired to persuade folks that climate change was real when we were trying to target climate change deniers. And the other thing that we were hired to do was by a Muslim American organization that was trying to convince people who were, by and large, you might call them racist, that Muslim Americans are actually amazing. And it was, both two projects were so, so challenging, because we went into it and be like, can we really talk to racists and climate deniers and have an impact? Because right now, when you talk to people out there, and we're so divided that the answer most people would say is no, it's impossible. These people are terrible. Don't expect me to have empathy for me. So I'll talk about the climate change one, because it was really, really powerful. We went and we found out that these people cared about the planet. I was shocked. We went out. Our opinion was like, they didn't. Like, do you know 30% of Americans don't believe climate change is real? This is like a huge segment of the population. So went out, and the biggest thing we say is about trying to have empathy, understanding why people feel the way they feel, do what they do, and believe what they believe. So that's what we went out to start out with and tried to understand. We found out is these people really, really cared about the planet. They really loved a lot of things, like fishing. They really liked hunting. You can argue whether or not that's right. But they liked being outdoors. They cared about that being there for the future. What they did not like was that climate change meant things were going to be more expensive. They did not like that that movement made them feel judged, shamed, and like they were a part of a different club. They did not like that they thought that things were going to be more highly regulated, because that meant that government was going to come and take away their freedoms and their rights. They did not like that many people that are environmentalists are hypocrites, in their opinion. They did not like a lot of these things, but what they did like was the planet. So what we found out is if we talked about it, took climate change out of the conversation. By the way, my firm is the company that came up with the term climate change to begin with. It used to be called global warming. Now it's climate change. So what we found out is, no, don't talk about climate change, which is kind of interesting for us to find out. Instead, talk about the reasons that you're doing it. So what we came out with was this idea of, we don't do it for what we read in the news. We do it to preserve our views. I have my reasons. What are yours? And we went through all of these different similar kinds of language strategies to talk about it that way. And what we found is if you could get people engaged in that way, that they'd start going on what we call the environmental curve, the continuum, and then that would get them up to the top. And then you could talk to them as if they were environmentalists. But unless and until you started to engage them over here, you couldn't pull them to climate change. And it had a profound impact, and it's going to be a campaign. And I'm really excited about the work, because it's so antithetical to what so many of us think. People say all the time to me, like, wait, you expect me to have empathy for someone who is pro-gun control? They're evil. And I'm like, yes, I expect you to have empathy, because empathy does not equal endorsement.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Empathy simply is about understanding, so that you can start having a better conversation, so you can form a connection, so that you can move somebody to the other side. So that's the hardest thing.
Thank you. That's awesome. All right, Roxana. So you have become an influential voice with the incredible work you are doing at We All Grow Latina. Can you tell us about your journey and how you leverage your ethnicity and culture to build a community and to influence that community?
Sure. So I started my career in marketing, and it was just in the general market. Like when I worked at Colgate-Palmolive, it was just selling, you know, toothpaste to everyone. And I took a break when I started having children, and it was going to be temporary. And I discovered the world of blogs back in 2005. And I started writing while I was on maternity leave, and I guess never stopped. And through that world, the whole digital revolution, we've all seen, for good and for bad actually, related to your work, people find their tribe. In my case, it was very positive. I was able to find not just other mothers like me, but women of color, and specifically in my case, Latinas. And when I started out my career, I did not want to do Hispanic marketing. I specifically didn't want to do it. Not that I had anything against it. I'm a proud Latina. I was living in Miami. I just didn't see the value in being different and being authentic. So in the positive side of the internet, I found a community of Latinas, an emerging community, and I found that very exciting. And the marketing MBA in me saw that there was a large market out there, a large demographic that's growing and that's underserved and didn't have a community to tie them together. So I joined forces with my partners. One of them had started Latina Bloggers Connect, which is the precursor of We All Grow Latina, and we came together to bring originally companies that wanted to market to digital Latinas online. And that has evolved really to a community of women because we have found that women of color are starting, it's known, we didn't find that, but women of color are a huge part of the economy. We're starting businesses at a higher rate. We have been starting businesses at a higher rate. We're big in entrepreneurship, but what we don't feel is permission to be ourselves. We don't feel that we are influential. And when you're leading a community, you see that every individual actually is super powerful and they don't see that. And that's the work that we do. We have conferences and events. We work with brands that want to work with Latinas, a little tangentially with politics and the work that you do, but not really. Really, we've been focusing more and more on in empowering these women to own their power, to start their businesses, and to get educated. And it's addictive. So I've stayed with that. I haven't turned back. And that's really where it came from. And learning, teaching these women to be influential themselves, and learning myself that what I was rejecting is really what has made me influential. Leaning into the aspect of me that I was like, oh, that's not important. I'm a marketer. I can sell to anyone. And I can. But finding that sphere of influence, that authenticity, is really truly what made us kind of continue to grow.
When you're dealing with your community, what do you think are their biggest obstacles to owning their power of influence?
I think there's two things. One is they're not aware of how much influence women of color, or we have, just because of our numbers. Companies come to us because they want to talk to, they know that the U.S. is very multicultural. They know that most corporate, the bigger the company, the more they understand that. So as a business, that has been great for us. Our community doesn't believe that quite yet. And more and more, that's what we're changing, trying to them to see that as a, that's their power. The other thing is really structural lack of opportunities. That's a much bigger problem, and that we're working with different teams to be part of the solution. We are in the middle trying to bring everybody together. I think the mic just turned off. Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me? Okay. We're in the middle trying to connect, to make those changes, and to empower the community to see their power. But individually, these women, they just need to be made aware of their power, and that's what we do.
Thank you. Great. All right. Shannon,
yes.
Can you share an example of when you've appealed to both hearts and minds to influence others?
Yes. Anybody else in here have to lead without authority?
Yeah.
Those who haven't raised your hands,
ouch.
My guess is you just haven't.
Drinking water. Yes.
Yeah, so I've had the privilege of working the majority of my career in large organizations, and I think whether it's a large organization, a small organization, whether you're focusing on a marketing strategy or global warming, influencing without authority, influencing others, and appealing to hearts and minds is really at the root of the most successful outcomes. And the heart and the mind, so the mind speaks to the rational. You know, you have to have a well-formed argument, you know, such as for climate change, such as for the direction we want to go in for our marketing strategy in order to deliver a new therapy to the market for patients in need. And the rational has to be there. You have to be well-informed. However, partnering that with the emotional to appeal to, and I love how you went and you found that common meeting point of planet. No matter how far apart you are, whether it's a divisive issue or whether it's difference of opinion in business, finding the common thread that people can connect with emotionally and getting down to their personal values, which is, I think, where you arrived. What is the value system of the person? The value that they have to make the world a better place, the value they have to provide for their children, the value they have in our industry to bring life-saving therapies to patients who are out there without an option and are having life-limiting and altering conditions. So appealing to that sense of purpose, sense of values that everybody has, and tapping into that in an emotional way and showing vulnerability, you know, for a leader to talk about emotions and their own emotions and connecting that with the emotions of others while they overlay the very, you know, rational argument for why to go in a certain direction really is the secret sauce.
It reminds me of that expression, know your audience, right?
Yeah.
But no, more than that, like know what drives them, what they value, like really where they speak. I love that. Lee. Let's talk about like how we use influence more on a day-to-day level, like in our careers, like in our daily work level or life things. Tell us about a time when you've had to use persuasion in your influence in your own career, not as a job, right? But in your own career development.
Yeah.
Or trajectory.
So there was a moment about 4 or 5 years ago in my career. Have y'all, anybody had 360 reviews?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do they hurt? Like, man, I know feedback's a gift, but ouch. Right? So about 4 years ago, I guess it was, we had our first 360 review at our company, and I love what I do. Like, I feel so blessed every single day to be able to go in and play with words. Like, what better job on the planet for a word geek like me is there? I love it. So I went into this, and I was friends with most people I worked with. I'd been there for 10 years at the time. I knew I was really good at what I did, but what I didn't understand is what kind of impact I was having on the folks as I was having as a leader. Because I never really thought about being a leader as much as I thought as being really good at what I did. So when I got my 360 feedback, my boss, who's our CEO, handed me these printed pages in his office at the end of the day and said, I want you to take these home and think about them. Like, oh, shit. And he said, I want you to know this is going to be really hard for you, but I've got your back. Do whatever you need to do, and let's talk about it tomorrow. So I went home, I opened a bottle of wine or two, and I read these pages, and what I saw in these pages devastated me. So number one, people thought I was really good at business development, but what they thought was that I was using my looks to get business, which does not mean using my looks, by the way. They thought I was sleeping with people. This was pre-Me Too, and that's what they thought.
And by they, you mean the men or the women, or both?
I don't know. No. they thought it was men that I was sleeping with. I had a bunch of male clients of a certain type, and a lot of people had made that assumption. I'll explain that in a second. The second thing I heard is people thought I was really good at what I did, but they didn't necessarily think of me a leader. They thought of me more as a friend. And because I was their friend, it made it hard for me to lead. And that's a really tough time in your career when you don't realize that. So that was the second thing. Third thing I heard, I was trying to have a baby at the time, and I didn't tell anybody, because I don't know if any of you have gone through infertility issues, but there's a lot of shame and horror and terrible procedures and processes along the way that you just don't talk about. you sort of try to go and be like, I'm going to go in late tomorrow, get my blood work done, have this procedure nobody's going to know about. And you think nobody knows, by the way, when you're there and you're not there and you're not doing well and you're hormonal and you're insane, people notice. Note to self. Okay, so I took this feedback and I thought, oh my God, this is the worst moment of my life. I love what I do. And I said to my husband at the time, I said, I am never setting foot in my office again. I'm quitting. I'm finding another job. I don't know what it is. And I thought, no, I love what I do. Can I change this? Can I turn it around? So here's, this is a long story and I'm sorry. It was like the hardest thing I ever had to do. It took me about 2 weeks to come to terms with it because you know you cannot be emotional and curious at the same time. You know it is impossible. So if you feel yourself triggered, slow things down. If you're trying to influence somebody and you're getting elevated, slow things down. Because the only way to slow things down is by asking questions, by the way. There's a, like your brain, it processes, curiosity and emotion process in the same part of your brain. You cannot have both. So I was very emotional until I got curious. I couldn't slow things down enough to have a conversation. So 2 weeks later, I got in front of my staff at a staff meeting on Monday, and I said this. I said, guys, I want you to know I got your feedback, and I'm devastated by it. It hurts. I don't know what to do. I've thought about leaving, but I don't want to leave. I love it here, and I love you guys, and I'm committed to doing better for you. So I heard three things. Number one, I heard that you think I'm really good at new business, and that's awesome. But I also heard you think that I'm sleeping with clients, and I'm ashamed because I never have, but I know what's happened. There's a running joke at the company about some clients that have hit on me in front of others that we make constantly. And so when a certain kind of client comes in and be like, oh, give it to Lee, she'll close the deal. One of the clients had famously, at the end of focus groups, the end of the night, we all go out for drinks. I don't know if any of you have been in this kind of situation. The client in front of everybody said, hey, Lee, want to go grab another drink? Let's go up to my minibar. And we ended up leaving around the same time later on in the night. And people all thought, I went up to his minibar. Ew, like, do you think I'd fall for that line of all lines? But it became a running joke, and I participated in the joke because I was so uncomfortable with it, I didn't know what else to do. Have any of you ever done this, participated in a joke you shouldn't have? I did, and I said, guys, I've made a joke out of it. You have too. Never doing it again. Please don't. Do you have any idea how upsetting this is to me? And I was almost in tears. Second thing I heard is you don't know where I am, so you think I'm slacking. Well, let me tell you, I've had two surgeries, and I've been trying really hard to have a baby. I couldn't, and that's over, but if I'm going to be places, you can have access to my calendar. I'm going to be transparent about it. You'll know where I am, but that's where I've been, and I'm sorry. I'll do better going forward. And the third thing I heard is that they wanted me to be a leader, and this is what I was going to do. I know that I've been leading through friendship. I'm going to do better. The first thing I'm going to start doing next week is going to teach everybody how to do new business, and so I still do that in my company. There was something just profound about this moment. It was a reset. Within the next year, I became president of my company. Now I've got a book. I'm on television as a thought leader. My life completely changed. Their opinion of me completely changed. But it never would have happened without that authentic moment, without that moment of saying, guys, this is my truth. And it's hard. It's hard to lean into these criticisms. It's hard to get curious. It's impossible. We've all had these moments, but they can define you. They can change you. They can inspire you. They can make you better. And they will help you influence. And then for the rest of your life, you'll be able to have these moments that you can help other people through these same kinds of times. So that's a moment in my career where I use
it. I love that. And I love it as a leader, you actually got curious about your impact on other people and how
everything
they experience with you. Because, you know, in my company, we do 360s for people, feedback. And all too often, I see leaders say, nope, not me, ouch, and I'm not going to care. And it's when you do care. And I love that you actually brought it to your team and had a conversation. That is magical.
It's so easy just to say it's not true.
Yeah,
that's
so
the
easy.
Other thing. Like, be like, I never did that. Screw them.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was week one.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
And it's really easy to be like, oh, well, I'll send them more emails. It's so easy to like figure out all by yourself what you're going to do differently instead of going to the people that you have to do things differently with and getting their input. So I love that.
Yeah.
Well done. You're like a unicorn. I love
I don't
that.
Know about that. It's a painful process, I'll tell you that much.
I like it, the ouch. Yeah. All right, Roxana, what advice do you have for women of color or just all of us women when we're working to build our influence at work or online, professional influence? What's your advice?
It's a little different online and at work, but just in general, you have to own what you know, and you have to own your expertise. I'm sure you have heard of that statistic, and I don't remember the number, but that women, when we see, for example, a job listing, we see it as a list of requirements, right? And we won't apply for a job if we don't hit every single thing in the job description.
90%. Women have to have 90%.
Thank you. And, you know, men see it as a wish list, right? Like, this is the ideal. And they go for it.
I love that.
I think it's great that men do that, honestly. And I think that affects us. You know, if you think of influence as a job, right, as something you want to achieve, a job you're going for, you have to own what you do know. Obviously, you have to work on, you know, we are all always evolving, learning, improving. There's always room for improvement for everyone. But I think in general, women of color in particular, but women in general, we need to own that we do have expertise. We do know our stuff. And we have to be willing to put ourselves out there and be vulnerable and use our influence. You know, when you are influential or on the road to influence, you can become criticized. You can be criticized as aloof. You can be, people can question your motivations, how you got there. But if you know, it comes with the territory and it's a little bit harder, you know, than just sitting in the shadows. But you got to go out there and own it.
Yeah, that reminds me of what Jen talked about in her opening, where it's like, you know, if you're going to sit at the table in a meeting, sit at the table. Mm-hmm. Be heard. And we were talking about, Lee and I earlier, about shameless self-promotion. Women don't do it. And when I say shameless self-promotion, I mean self-promoting without shame, right? Mm-hmm. Because how many women out here find it hard to promote themselves? And you're not going to, how many men do? Nobody, right? I'm sure some men do.
Yeah.
But like, you're not going to influence unless you're willing to own your expertise and to sit at the table and be heard. I love that. All right, Ms. Shannon, yes. We've talked a lot about emotional people. All right, but we're also, so we are women, many of us. How do you balance, like how do you tap into emotion during influence without being emotional? Like, how do you rock that line? And what are the pitfalls that especially women or men should avoid when tapping into emotion or using emotion in the workplace?
Yep. It's more of a tightrope than a broad beam some days. It feels
great.
Like that, right? Because you have the power in you to connect with others on that emotional level by being authentic, by being vulnerable, by being willing to go there. But we also know that if it goes too far, then we run the risk of being viewed as overly emotional, crying at work, not able, you know, to get with the program. So it is a fine line. However, your compass, you have an internal compass, you know, you have that internal judgment and calibration as to in given settings based upon how large the group is, how well you know the group, what that calibration, what that right temperature is for that emotion. And I feel one thing that gets in the way of us going there, I wanted to make sure I mentioned, is that internal roommate you have in your head. You know, I think that is, to answer some of the earlier questions and comments about what gets in women's way, is that voice in your head, and listening to that voice in your head to how nice it is to you. Does anyone have a voice in their head that if they spoke to other people the way it speaks to you in your head, you'd
be
appalled?
Her name is Louise, and she is a pain in my butt.
So letting that inner roommate be managed. You're never going to get rid of it, but train that inner roommate to speak to you in a way you would like her to speak to others. The golden rule, maybe getting up to the platinum rule. It starts with yourself and allowing yourself to like yourself, to treat yourself well. That is the key to letting that best self out to others. And you are going to be in a safety zone of doing that and not err on tipping it too far with that natural compass that you'll have an awareness, self-awareness of the room, of the audience.
That's great. Thank you. You know, I did my master's thesis on gossip in the workplace. And one of the things I learned in the research was that positive emotions are just as contagious as negative emotions if you're a sticky person. So I would like to go down that, because I think we're going to do Q&A pretty soon. Quickly, like, which emotion do you tend to use more when you are influencing, negative or positive? Which one works better for you? And we just have all you guys answer that.
When we're influencing?
When you're trying to be an influencer, what's your go-to emotion, negative one or positive?
I'm definitely a positive. Maybe it's the work that I do, but I just find I personally connect more when someone is positive, and I just think there's too much negativity out there. So that's the one I use.
Yeah. I have several team members in the audience, so, you know, keep me honest here, but I would say positive emotion. That is the way to get that positive energy flowing.
Easy to go negative, right? All right.
It has to be positive, and that's just one thing. But I think it's really important to know that there are negative and positive emotions, but there's also a third category, which is inhibitory emotions.
Which is what?
Inhibitory emotions.
Ooh.
Inhibitory emotions, actually, I talk about this a little bit in the book. There's this thing called the change triangle. Inhibitory emotions will keep you from doing anything productive. There's three emotions there. There's shame, guilt, and anxiety. Shame, guilt, and anxiety. When you're talking to someone that you totally disagree with, that's often where you will try to put them. How could you possibly think that?
Ooh.
If you only knew, you would never think that. Shame. And if you ever put anybody in those emotions, you're not going to have a productive conversation. They're more than likely to either, if you're lucky, bury their head in the sand. Otherwise, you're going to go like this.
That's why my sister-in-law hates me. Because I'm...
There you go.
Yeah. So stay on those two. But you can find the other ones also can be productive sometimes?
Fear and anger can actually be, they're biologic reasons. There's biological emotions that actually serve function. Fear actually tells you that you need to get away from something. Anger says there's a problem needs to be solved. But I tell people, like, that's why negative ads can work, because they can tie into those. But if they tie into anxiety and shame rather than fear and anger, very closely linked, by the way, then you can get something to do. But that's for advanced. I would not encourage anyone to play with fear and anger as a persuasion tool at all.
We're not qualified.
Well, what's the difference between fear and anxiety? Fear is about something specific. Anxiety is about something in general.
Yeah, that's right. And they both put you into fight or flight. They both get you in the amygdala. Your reptile brain takes over. And then your executive functioning, takes a dive.
And if you're trying to lead personally, influence the positive.
I love it. Oh, can we give a round of applause for our panelists? It is now time for you all to ask the questions. So come on up. I believe there's microphones somewhere. Somewhere.
I've been told, too, that I'm supposed to share with you guys that I ended up having a baby. She's 8 months old. That's the other part of the story I should have finished.
Well, somebody had some influence somewhere.
Yeah, I know, right? There
like,
we go.
If you're not going to tell them, I am.
There you go.
I love it. All right, please, we'll start. We'll do one here. I'll go back and forth. Please tell us your name before you ask us the question.
My name is Leah McFarland. I work at State Street here in Boston. Picking up on some of the themes of the discussion, there seems to have been some conflicting research released recently around whether facts do or do not matter. And I would be interested to hear some nuanced feedback from the panel around that.
Whether what or what does not matter?
Whether facts do or do not matter. In other words, whether they can be used effectively to influence others or not.
I live in D.C., so I clearly am not qualified to answer that.
That's a very strong perspective on this.
Yeah, Leah, I think you have a very...
I have a very strong perspective on this, and my answer is facts alone do not matter. And by the way, they never did. People would say all the time, like, is this new? This is crazy. It seems insane. What is different is we used to trust authority. Like, I don't know how many of you remember, you used to have a dinner party, and there was the one person that was like the Encyclopedia Britannica. They'd be like, fact check, no. And you believe them. Now we're all like one Google search away from finding whatever opinion we want to confirm what we already believe. And who cares if the person that wrote that was in Idaho in their underpants when they wrote it? It's like, it is fact. It is on the interwebs.
I'm from Idaho, by the way.
What's that? So what I do say is that this isn't about putting lipstick on a pig. This is not about not using facts and not having the facts on your side. But what people often try to do is say, if people only knew X, Y, Z, they would understand. If people only knew X, Y, Z was happening to the planet, then they would believe it. If people only understood fact, 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 they would change their minds. We are not rational human beings. As you said, we are emotional human beings. So you have to find that emotional connection first, and then you can get facts in. But what we are as human beings is we recognize patterns. That's how we make the decisions that we make. It's we pick things up that reinforce what we already believe, and we reject what we don't. So if you're going to try to change somebody's minds with facts alone, it's not going to work. And that's based on confirmation bias. There's a lot of behavioral science behind this.
Because we hear with our hearts, really, don't we?
That's right.
We hear with our value systems. Thank you. All right, this side.
Hi there. My name is Radha Patel. I work at Wayfair. This question does not apply to my boss, who might be in the room, but wanted to get your feedback on how you deal with a toxic boss. Like, I've had one previously, you know, the person who makes you cry in a corner, like, takes credit for your work, and the advice I had gotten at that point was leave, which is what I did. So I'd love to get your feedback. If you don't feel, one, can you truly influence the situation? And two, if you can't, should you leave?
I got to take this one.
You wrote a book on it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, who's out? Bam. So there's the first thing I would say. Thank you. The first thing, she's so lovely. You got to pull apart whether they're a difficult boss, a really difficult boss, or a truly toxic boss. A truly toxic boss is someone who's abusive, abrasive, demeaning, debasing. Someone that is actually a toxic person. They are the screamers, the shouters, the narcissists, the tyrants, the bullies, the people that literally belittle you. When you have a toxic boss, what I need everyone in this room to know, who has had one before? And I'm tempted to ask you who has one now. Does anyone have one now? Here's what you need to know if you whose boss is in the room and they're like, this shit's being videotaped. I am not risking it. If you have a toxic boss, nobody is coming to save you. HR ain't coming to save you because you know what HR does, and I love my HR people. They're there to save the company. You have to get out. And until you can get out, you have to strategies to adapt and kind of not adapt, to survive. Is what you need to do. Stay at the line of fire. There's a whole chapter in the book, chapter 22. But there's things you can do, but you do have to get out. And if you stay and you work for a toxic boss, your risk of heart disease, stroke, and now diabetes goes up by 60%. The mental health professionals and NIH tell you it is as bad as PTSD, bad or spouse syndrome. It is bad. It can take you up to 2 years to recover. Who is still recovering from a toxic boss? So get out. Other bosses, difficult bosses, you can't influence, right? You got to figure out, as these ladies are saying, what matters to them, who they are, what their preference is, the platinum rule. Figure out how you can kind of adjust your behavior to work better with them. But you're never going to change them. You can only earn their trust. But toxic bosses, get out. Sorry, I'm so passionate about that. No one should work for a toxic boss.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you file a hostile work environment on the way out?
That's totally up to you. It depends on your current organization. It depends on the power of your HR department. It depends on if you have 7 years of your life to give up in legal proceedings, right? It really is a personal choice. And you might want to do that, but you definitely need to get out because no one's going to save you.
Hi, I'm Jillian. And my question is, how do you balance authenticity and vulnerability with being professional?
Yeah, let me jump in on that. There's no one answer to that fits all, which is where I was going with. You have an internal calibration system, and your self-awareness and professionalism will guide you. And my advice would be to let that internal compass guide you. You'll know if you're walking the right line or not. It's very important to take that first step, though, to allow yourself to open that up, to shush the internal roommate in your head, to let some of your uniquenesses, your energy, your vulnerabilities on display, to connect with other people appropriately. Maybe start off small and work your way up if this is sort of a new talent, but I would say it's riskier not to step into that pool than it is once you're in the pool that you're going to do something career limiting.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
So just, I don't know if you mean also an online influence, but a lot of people are looking to set their online influence. And the advice I can give that is similar, but the problem is that online influence, a lot of times people think they have to bleed in front of everybody, you know, to be authentic and share everything. And you know, if not, you're not being authentic. And that, unfortunately, started in the early days of social media because people clicked, you know, on articles and stories where people shared their deepest, darkest secrets. There's a place for that, and it depends on what you do. But in general, You have to know what it is that you're trying to build influence on. We're at the stage of online social media influence where it's matured enough that you have to know what your message is going to be, what you want to be influential on, and then you can share a little bit of vulnerability, but you don't have to tell everybody everything. You know, you can keep things for yourself, and you can be vulnerable with the people around you.
And in the workplace, you want to be careful that you don't overshare, right? Mm-hmm. Because that kind of stuff can kind of come back to haunt you. Like, I wouldn't recommend anyone going to their boss and saying, oh my God, I got so wasted last night that we, like, dined and ditched on our thing. Because even if your boss is your friend, they will never forget that. Like, they will always, that will rattle in, mm-hmm. in the back of their heads.
Hi there. My name is Anna, and thanks for your time today. Can you give any specific actionable or tactical advice for how to influence up? I'm in a situation a lot where I have to convince people who have higher seniority than me at the executive level on ideas and tactics, and I'm just looking for some specific actions I can take specifically as a younger professional woman.
Want to take one? Oh, well, I
have
one
of you guys.
You wrote a book on this. Yeah, I do this, but you guys, they have rules. Like, everyone give one tip for that.
One tip I have for that is that whatever it is that you want to talk about, make sure you're framing it around what they need to hear. Mm-hmm. So I had somebody recently come in. We did reviews a few months ago, and one of my team members came in and said, I'd like to have a raise. Now, most all of them said, I want more money, right? But this one woman came in and she said, there's three reasons why. One, I know as a firm we're committed to growth, and here's what I've done to commit to the growth of the company. Number two, I know that until we get everybody hired, that we need people to be more efficient. So I've done these things that have made us more efficient. Number three, all of them were framed around what we needed as a firm or what was important to me. None of them were like, I work harder than anybody else. And so when you're trying to influence up, I think trying to frame it around an organizational imperative or something that's important to your leader rather than what you're trying to do tactically is going to help you have much better impact.
I love it. Yeah. Shannon, what's your one tip?
That and I totally agree with that. You have to link it to what the company, the boss is trying to achieve, but also be prepared with some original thinking that hasn't been thought of before, a new idea that will impress that boss, whether he or she, in order to stand out from the ideas or the suggestions that have been put forward in the past.
I love it. And what's your tip from
listening? I'll just kind of agree with everyone. It's really about solving problems. Managing up is not about being liked. It's not whether your boss or whoever it is you're trying to influence likes you or how persuasive you are or how hot up and coming you are in the company. It's really about whether you can solve a problem and being able to communicate that.
Yeah. And I would say at the end of the day, managing up, influencing up is about managing the relationships that matter the most. And so finding ways to build relationships, because you're talking about the boss above your boss, right? You're talking about the boss above your boss. You want to find opportunities to build relationships, to network, to get to know. If people don't know you, people need to know you in order for opportunities to come. So build a relationship. And everything these ladies said, it's really all about having a positive impact. Work with somebody. I think we have time for one more question. What's our time? We have 2 minutes. Go. Name.
Hi, I'm Nicole. I've often been told that I'm naive because I always see the best in people and have definitely been taken advantage of. So I guess what advice do you have on really being able to gauge people's intentions in the workplace?
Yeah. Let's take it.
Yeah, I tend to view new people that I meet and know as innocent till proven guilty as well. And I've run into that trap as well of potentially being naive, because I'm from Ohio as well. It kind of runs in the water there. I would say don't let that feedback allow you to become cynical, but perhaps take in and observe maybe more than the surface and the original impression that you have to seek some additional observations or thinking through any red flags or cautions that come up to think through those a little bit more and to see them the first time.
I think what Brené Brown says about in one of her books, she talks about we are going to be much happier human beings if we are willing to give people the benefit of the doubt. And you talked about that, like, assume positive intent. I get really scared when people stop doing that because I think it's so important to being able to influence, just being able to give people the benefit of the doubt. So I'd be careful about losing that.
And I'd say, know the holes people are going to poke in your ideas before they have a chance to do it. So when they say, well, have you thought about this? Well, in fact, I have. And here's what we would do about it. Did you want anything?
No.
All right, I think, are we time? We are done. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you to these amazing ladies. Lee, Jen, are you coming back up to say goodbye? No, Jen's like, no. Lee and I had to run to the bookstore to sign books, but Shannon and Roxana can stay and talk with you guys for a few minutes if you want to chit-chat. Come to the bookstore and come see us. Bye.